Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing Deadpool and Wolverine, Trap, and It Ends With Us. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, super producer Craig Stanton.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, Craig.
How are you?
I'm great.
That's excellent to hear.
We do not have AJ with us. He's vacationing.
No, AJ.
We were planning on maybe trying to set up a remote rig situation. Did not come to pass. So
yeah, you know, us today. Some people are dedicated and some people aren't. That's all I want to say about that. I hope he's enjoying his vacation. Well-deserved vacation.
I'm sure it is great.
Hardworking, self-employed man.
What's new with you?
What's new with me, Bill? I'm a little beat, I'll be honest. Okay. Little overbooked on the summer travel schedule.
Wow.
Got some more coming up tomorrow, flying out to San Francisco for a family wedding. Should be very fun.
Just jet setting around.
Did some band stuff the last couple weeks ago. Did some out-of-town shows. It's just been a lot. All good things.
Yeah, good. It's good to stay busy.
I bet there are some listeners who are experiencing a little bit of like summer travel fatigue, perhaps. But no, I'm doing very well. How are you? How's your week been?
It's been great. I had a little vacation of my own last weekend. Friends and I rented a little Airbnb on a lake in New Hampshire and just lived lake life.
Oh, wow.
So that was really nice. That's been my only real summery thing this summer. It's been a very unsummery summer for me. I haven't been to the beach. I have not been to the beach once.
Jackknives? Cannonballs?
Into the lake?
Yeah.
No, just onto the tube and then just float. Just a rest and relaxation. It was very quiet lake. It was very nice. It was a good time. S'mores,
where were we?
Of course.
New Hampshire?
This was New Hampshire, yes.
Wow. What a time. What a time great. That must
so,
have been.
So yeah, good time. Good time.
Let me ask you this. Have you watched anything recently?
I was going to ask you the same thing because you've been flying. So you've probably done plane movies.
Well, okay. So I'll start then. I hope to do some more plane movies tomorrow and when I fly back. But when we did the shows, we did some shows out in the, what do you call that part of the country? We went to Boise and then we went to Salt Lake City and then we went to Denver. They call it the West.
People in Denver say,
thanks for coming out West. And I would say, we've been out West. We've played California a bunch. You're in the middle, my friend. Anyways, I don't know if that like has a name. I mean, the Rocky Mountains, I guess, if it's west of the Rockies,
it's the West. Yeah.
I guess so. Anyway, so flew out there and watched American Fiction.
Great movie.
It was a great movie. Not only was it a great movie, it was a great plane movie.
Sure.
Zero nudity.
Yep.
Zero action. A lot of talking. Not even so super emotional or anything overly heavy.
Yeah.
It wasn't meaningless, but like, you know, it's not like you're sobbing in your seat.
Yeah.
So right. 10 out of 10 plane movie and pretty fun movie as well.
Yeah, it's a good one. That's a good one. I think we talked about it. AJ caught up on that one recently as well. We talked about it. So now we've all seen it. Yeah, love it.
This is a classic Sigsy thing where you see a movie first and then eventually AJ sees it and eventually I see it. So we actually end up talking about it like way more than we probably should.
Three separate occasions.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it was a good time. It was a little bit, so this is the movie. What's that actor's name? Westworld guy?
Jeffrey Wright.
Jeffrey Wright, yeah. So this is him where he like writes the novel or writes the fake book. It was actually much less about that than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. It's much more about him as a person and how he
family
has a relationship with his family and like all this. It's very like, there's more to it than I thought. I thought it was going to be more about this like wacky caper that he goes on writing a fake bestseller.
Right.
So anyways, good times. I also watched half of 10 Cloverfield Lane because we were flying from wherever. Oh, this was on the, we went from San Francisco to Boise. We had a layover in San Francisco and flying like over the Rockies, like getting to that part of the country is apparently notoriously turbulent on the plane. And so shit was getting fucking crazy. And interestingly enough, the movie was also getting fucking crazy while that was happening.
Yeah.
If you remember the movie, it's been a couple of years, like the scene where the lady from the outside is like banging on the glass, her face is all fucked up trying to get inside. And it's the moment where the woman who's trapped or she believes kidnapped at the time, realizes that like the thing that John Goodman has been telling her is actually true. So like all that insanity is happening on my little fucking 6-inch screen while the plane is just fucking going nuts. And I was like, I got to fucking turn this off. I'm going to have a heart attack. Like, this is far too much for me to take right now. So I never got to finish it because of the flight on the way back, different airline, blah, 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 different selections. So
sure. But you've seen it before, obviously. This was a
revisit. It's alphabetical. So like when they show you the list, it's right at the top of the list.
You're going through the in-flight entertainment program.
You gotta
BYOM. You gotta bring your own movies on an iPad.
Before we took off, I texted you a couple options. I was like American Fiction, 10 Cloverfield. Yes, there was one other, and then I also said, I just realized I have fucking Interstellar downloaded in iTunes on my laptop. And you were like, if you freaking watch Interstellar on a laptop on a flight, I'll like kill myself or something.
I stand by that.
Went, okay. And I shut the laptop as I put it away.
No, that is something I would say. Yeah, no, I stand by that.
Still there, by the way. Might do it tomorrow morning.
Mistake. Speaking of Interstellar, this is not in our news segment, but we might as well. They did officially announce it will be re-released in 70mm IMAX December 6th. So if you were going to do a rewatch, I would say wait.
Book your calendar. Oh, actually, that's not a bad call.
Yeah. Anyway.
So that's what I've been watching, Bill. Okay. And I hope to grow that list a little bit tomorrow. What about you?
I did a rewatch of The Batman with Robert Pattinson. I don't know what it was, but it's just, I just felt like watching it again. I don't know how. It got in my brain and it wasn't going to go away until I did.
Was it raining that day?
Maybe.
It dark all day?
Maybe I heard that Nirvana song. I watched it in two parts because I forgot just how long that movie is. It's a solid 3 hours. So I was like, let me do this in two chunks. And, you know, upon revisit, the things that work about it, I actually like love even more seeing them again. And the things that don't work stood out even more as well. And I hated it. So still the movie remains a really mixed bag for me. I forgot how stunningly beautiful it is. Just like the look of the film, every shot is gorgeous. It's got the best suit of any movie. It's got like the Arkham game, Batman suit. It was awesome. The car chase is still like one of the best car chases I've seen in 10 years. And like having it be a muscle car kind of differentiates it from the Tumbler or from the Keaton car. The casting all around is great. There's just so much stuff in there I love. When
you think Pattinson, you think fucking American Muscle, baby.
It works. The Nirvana song does still bug me. Maybe slightly less because I was like, I almost had an aneurysm. I was so angry about it at first, and it's been years, so I guess
remind
I've calmed down a little bit
about this.
They start to use the melody of Something in the Way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you want to use the melody of a licensed song? Maybe, sure. And then they use the lyrics. Like you hear Kurt Cobain singing.
Yeah,
and
I'm like,
this is a weird choice for a soundtrack of a Batman movie. And then they cut to the fact that it's in the background of his headphones. So he's listening to the Nirvana song in the DC universe. It's like such a jarring, weird decision when you're trying to like envelop you in the world of Gotham and then use one licensed song in the entire movie. It's like took me out of it completely. Anyway, still bugs me, maybe slightly less so. But I realized the real problem with the movie, the issue is the story, and the story issue is the Riddler. Like it doesn't work. Like he needs to get cut from the entire movie. Like I could rewrite this entire movie just around the stuff with Gordon and Falcone and Catwoman and her friend that goes missing. Like you could do it all as local crime and the Penguin. Like you could do it all as like a local crime story and the movie would still work. Because like when you get to the 2-hour mark of the movie, it's him and Catwoman confronting Falcone, and there's like a cool action scene and they confront him and everything comes to light, and there's a like, and it feels like, oh cool, we like wrapped up the story. Oh wait, there's another hour where he's fighting Riddler people in Madison Square Garden. You're like, what is this? Like it doesn't. And the Riddler, Paul Dano, does his best, but he's just doing a poor man's Heath Ledger Joker. Like it doesn't jive with the rest of the tone of the movie. It just really bothered me when I was watching it again, because in my head I was rewriting every scene to be like, all right, what if we didn't have the Riddler? How would we still connect all these other things? And you could still make it work.
Yeah.
And it'd be much more in line with some of the comics in that way. So I feel like it needed a lot of trimming and more drafts on it. Because I just don't think it really sticks the landing at all with some of that stuff at the end.
You might even say there was something in the way of it being a really good movie.
I'm gonna freak out. But anyway, so that. I mean, I have extensive notes on what I would do literally like scene for scene, but I won't drag you through those.
Maybe when
I talk to AJ, I will, because he would appreciate it. But that's where I'm at, is I did a rewatch of The Batman.
Phenomenal. All right, well, shall we get to what's been in the news?
Yeah, what is in the news, Craig?
All right, Bill. Well, what is that the distant sound of timpanis I hear? Boom, 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 boom. Thank you. Well, Bill, over the last 2 weeks, the games of the 33rd Olympiad have been taking place in Paris. Bill, I know you've been glued to your TV. What have been some of the highlights of the Olympic Games for you?
All right. First and only main highlight, Gold Zone on Peacock. Are you familiar with this, Craig?
I am, but I think you should tell the people what you're
Have you
about.
Watched any of it?
I have not, but we'll get to that later.
Oh my God. Okay. So Peacock has / NBC Universal, whatever they are, decided for the Olympic coverage this year, they would make a standalone, basically station that you can load up only on Peacock. It's not available on TV. Called the Gold Zone, where from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., round-the-clock coverage of all of the Olympic events, and they have hosts, including two of the hosts from the actual NFL Red Zone, come over.
Smart.
Exactly. And they do what's called whip-around coverage of everything in the Olympics. And so they will take you to whatever, basically anything that has a medal in contention. If there's like a gold medal moment, boom, they'll cut to it, and you'll get to see it live, and they'll cut back to something else. They'll bring up picture in picture. They'll do, you know, the quad box. They'll do the octobox at times.
Oh my God. Octobox.
They'll crack open the six pack, as they call it, when it's six boxes.
Wow.
Like, they have coverage everywhere. And then they just switch the audio around depending on what's happening. They got a little gold symbol if that particular thing has a medal on the line. When it's a quad box, but they're all for gold, it's called the Golden Quad. They have marketing for that specifically. Like, they thought everything.
It's brought to you by...
It's so incredible. It changes the way you watch the Olympics, and it becomes addictive. Like, it's unreal how invested you can become in it. And because there's always something happening. It is insane. And it's great because normally, when you're watching the Olympic coverage, you have the primetime show on NBC, and that's fine, where it gives the gymnastics or the biggest event, and they do the human interest stories, and they take you through what happened. But if there's a time difference, in this case, 6 hours, by the time the primetime comes around, you already know what happened.
Yeah. I mean, and that's now you're your classic, like, 1980s...
Yes.
Primetime TV broadcast, where you don't know what happens until fucking Costas.
So you're watching it. Exactly. Yeah. That's what it used to be. Growing up, we used to watch the Olympics in my house religiously, and we would watch every night primetime, and it would all be new to us. But now...
Somehow, regardless of what time zone the actual games were in, it was always at 8 p.m. It was always like 8 Eastern.
O'clock. And it felt like you were right there.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Times have changed. And so now, with the primetime being littered with commercials, plus the human interest pieces, like, you're not getting nearly as much actual Olympic footage. So then you have to hunt around to like USA or E or all these other channels that have all this different coverage, and like, you're trying to find something you might be interested in. Like, it's so much harder to watch until Gold Zone, which makes it so easy to watch. I was so thankful that my time off happened to overlap with the Olympics, because now at this point...
So are you floating on the lake, phone in hand, watching the fucking quad box or what?
Oh, I brought the Apple
Vision
TV.
Pro? Are you floating Vision Pro style?
No, but I brought the Apple TV. We had Gold Zone on at all times. And then when we knew that there would be like, we knew the schedule, they would tell you what's coming up. I'm like, all right, good window here.
Quad box.
I'm going to jump in the lake.
Box. Octobox. Octobox.
I'm telling you, it is the peak of our civilization. I will be taking 2 weeks off every 2 years just to watch Gold Zone for the rest of my life.
Wow.
Anyway, that's my Olympic take. Craig, it's all Gold Zone. I mean, the games themselves have also been riveting and dramatic and fantastic, and women's gymnastic was stellar. I love all of it. I do miss the fact that the Russians aren't in it. I feel like us going up against the Soviets is like part of the fun of the Olympics, but I understand the reasons, so here we are.
Yeah, fuck them. They cheated.
Yeah, well, there's that, and they also invaded Ukraine, but they're
Is that
out.
Why they're out? Is
they're out this year because of that. They were out previously for the doping.
Ah, okay. Sorry.
So again,
I'm not sorry. Fuck them still for invading a fucking sovereign nation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Fuck them for that too. Cheat all you want.
I do miss that contention. That's my only note. Otherwise, it's been, God, it's been incredible.
I'm very happy to hear that you're having a great time.
Oh boy. Here it comes.
I mean, I'm not trying to take the air out of the balloon or anything. I'm not an Olympics hater. Uh-huh. I just really don't care. I just don't care. It's just not for me. It's okay. It's okay. I don't begrudge anybody that's having a great time. I actually think it's awesome. I like America. I like sports. I like quad boxes and octoboxes.
This is tailor-made for you.
I've been thinking about this the last couple of days because maybe it's a baseball thing. Obviously, I'm a big baseball guy. So I feel like a big part of the sporting world that doesn't give a shit about baseball is like, oh, finally, some real sports in like what is otherwise, again, assuming you're not a baseball fan, a dead zone in the sports calendar, right?
Sure.
So like that's something. But yeah, I'm not a big Olympics guy. Never really have been. I like the hockey in the Winter Olympics.
Sure.
But it just doesn't really translate the same way to the basketball because, I don't know, it's just a different situation altogether.
Yeah, hey, I'm not
fucking USA, baby. Let's go. Let's win some gold. Let's do the flips. Let's throw the javelins. Let's do all of it. But I just, y'all do great over there and I'll be home.
Mm-hmm. That's disappointing, Craig. I'm actually, you can't see this. I'm watching the Olympics as we speak. The TV.
No. I can absolutely see it. You keep on looking up and there's like crazy lights. It looks like you have an LED in front of your face. That's just like flashing.
No, what I have in front of my face is a semifinal in table tennis between China and Korea.
See, I mean, give me a break.
It's women's doubles. It's electric.
My thing is I can watch like any sport, between like a neutral site and become like invested really quick, you know?
Yeah. That's why I think you would love it,
but I can't, but it has to be a sport that I know, that I understand, that I know the rules. Like I can't just go bombing into a fucking table tennis match.
Well, that's the fun of it because all the announcers take you through it. The guys running the gold zone will explain things. They'll throw graphics up with like rules every once in a while just to make sure you're up to speed. Like you get invested in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. Oh God, it's great. It makes life worth living, Craig.
Like I said, I'm happy for you. I'm happy for all the athletes. Congrats on the sex they're all probably having in the Olympic Village. I've heard that's really great.
Sure.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Great. Well, what else is in the news, Craig?
Octobox. all right. Well, sorry. major news out of the San Diego Comic-Con last week, Bill.
Yes.
Marvel has officially renamed its next Avengers movie to be called Doomsday and confirmed that Robert Downey Jr. will return to the MCU in the role of Victor Von Doom. This is a major shift away from the Kang the Conqueror storyline that had been setting up that they had been setting up before parting ways with Jonathan Majors. So, BG, what are your thoughts on this major pivot from Marvel?
Hi-oh. See what you did there.
No, I didn't do anything. You wrote the notes.
I didn't use the major as a joke about John the Majors, did I?
You put it in, there's asterisks.
Oh, I meant that as an emphasis, not as a joke. But it works either way.
I mean, you know.
I will say I am overall happy. I think that when the news first broke, I was a little mixed because it felt to me like they were kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's like you can't find a talented black actor to take over the role of Kang, like, and continue with all the work you've been doing. Like, that seemed odd to me that they would just throw it all out. Mm. Then I kind of sat and thought on it a little bit more, and it's like, well, was anyone actually really that excited about Kang? Like, at the end of the day, there was no buzz. Like, nobody was like waiting or invested in it. And the Loki finale acts as a wrap up to that if they wanted it to. So if they have a better story, and they came up with a better story to tell, like, now is the time to deploy it because it definitely feels like the MCU is a bit of a sinking ship, which when we get to Deadpool and Wolverine, we'll talk about that. Mm. And Robert Downey Jr. will get asses back in seats, like, no doubt about it. So being able to tell like a variant story of Tony Stark where in his universe he goes evil, he becomes Doom instead of Iron Man, like, that's a cool story idea. And Downey Jr.
So he's not playing a different character. He's playing a different version of his same character that in this parallel universe turns into a bad.
That seems to be the idea. Because they talk about the fact that they will leverage the multiverse to make this happen. So presumably he'll be in his universe. Something is going to go wrong. And instead of becoming Iron Man, he becomes Victor Von Doom.
Right.
So,
well, saying leverage the multiverse to make this happen is another way of saying we can do whatever the fuck we want, whenever the fuck we want, because none of this has to connect to each other, because infinite realities.
Precisely. And so, and Downey Jr. is coming off of his Oscar win with Oppenheimer. Like, I think giving him a different type of character to play, presumably he will not be just like Tony Stark. He's not going to be like quipping all over the place. Like, he'll get to play a more serious role of Von Doom. Like, that's a cool idea. It'll get people back. I also have seen people theorize, like, why don't you bring back Chris Evans as a variant of Cap that's actually loyal to Hydra? Like, bring back the entire original Avengers team, but have them be bad variants and have them have to fight the new squad.
Cool.
Like, that would be a cool idea. Yeah. So if they have a better
expensive,
movie idea,
but cool.
Yeah. If they have a better idea, they should go with the better idea. And no, nobody that I know of in my circles was like really waiting for the Kang thing anyway. So I think it's ultimately going to be a good move. And I also, my understanding, I haven't read the books, but from what I understand, when they get to the second Avengers movie, Secret Wars, that presumably, based on what happens in the books to some degree, will collapse the multiverse and they can get back to a singular timeline that they can reset whatever they want to reset. And so that will hopefully be the end of this sort of multiverse, which has clearly become a failed experiment in phase four of Marvel, where so many people have lost interest due to, like you said, the meaninglessness of it.
Yeah.
So presumably Secret Wars might collapse that back and then they can kind of decide what they want to do from there. I just hope that that is some sort of finality to this Marvel story arc. Like, I thought the Infinity Saga ended perfectly and now it's just kind of been limping along ever since with a lot of the same actors, and they got to do something to shift. So anyway, but ultimately, do I think the move to RDJ as Doom is a good one? Probably. I probably will be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels to me like just don't worry about the connectivity. Just make the best movie you can make.
Yeah.
Especially when you have this thing you've created where it just gives you a license to do whatever, whenever, with whomever.
Yep.
You know, and just let it rip. Make a great movie. People won't care about how it interconnects with everything else. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you can take that good movie, make a million sequels, and ruin it later. But for now, just make the best movie you can make.
You just got to get out of the starting gates, because the stuff that they've been putting out has not been working.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. I approve.
All right. Shall we move on to the Should I Go See It segment?
Sure.
We sort of built ourselves a bridge right away to our first movie, have we not?
We have Deadpool and Wolverine.
Deadpool and Wolverine, as you said. IMDb describes it thusly. Deadpool is offered a place in the Marvel Cinematic Universe by the Time Variance Authority, but instead recruits a variant of Wolverine to save his universe from extinction. Okay. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes.
Okay.
It gets a yes. It is similar to the other Deadpool movies in that it is wildly entertaining. Like, my face hurt from grinning the entire time. Like, it was just like laughing throughout, hysterical. So as far as entertainment value goes, it's hard to beat, especially if you are a fan of superhero films in general. Like, it is a lot of fan service, but I felt in a good creative way versus in a patronizing way. It was really fun. I mean, I saw it opening night with a full house, place was packed and everyone was going ballistic, and there's a ton of fun cameos and special things. So you should try to go in spoiler free. I mean, it's already on the path to make $1 billion. So whoever saw it has probably already seen it, but I will not spoil anything, but you should go in fresh because the number of surprises and references and stuff is part of what makes it so fun, especially in a full theater. So it was great. And the interesting thing is that it now makes the Deadpool part of the MCU versus just the other two Deadpool movies were just sort of Fox movies when Fox was not part of Disney. And they make this very clear with lots of meta humor about the MCU, jokes about the Fox movies, a lot of fourth wall breaks, like typical Deadpool stuff. I was actually surprised at how much Disney let them really just hammer the MCU for being bad. They really make fun of it, which is hilarious.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about that because it had been my perception up till now that Deadpool had always been in the MCU, but I guess not. And this is probably a stupid question, so we shouldn't spend much time on it, but I knew he wasn't a DC character. So I just, I thought there was only two categories.
Yes and no. There is, he's a Marvel character, yes. But there was a time where 20th Century Fox had the rights to the X-Men and Deadpool. Sony has the rights to Spider-Man. And then Disney ended up buying Marvel, who had everything else. Gosh, and now Disney bought Fox. So now that's why the X-Men and Deadpool are now part of the overall MCU, because Disney has now bought all of them. So the only thing that, and they made a deal with Sony to get Spider-Man. So the only stuff now that's not in the MCU basically is the Sony movies that are offshoots of Spider-Man, mm-hmm. like Venom and mm-hmm. like Kraven the Hunter and Morbius, those movies. Everything else is now in under the umbrella of the MCU that Disney now owns.
Gotcha.
So they make lots of jokes about that. It's good. It's a lot of fun. It is a little long. I mean, for a superhero movie that makes fun of superhero tropes, it still falls into a lot of those same traps. There's still, you know, a laser light show finale at the end of Act 3. It just could have been tightened up a little bit, especially when, like, there's no real... The plot is impossible to explain because it doesn't really make much sense. Like you mentioned, the Time Variance Authority, the TVA from the Loki show, comes into play, and they just start riffing on different timelines and falling into the void, and it gives them an opportunity to basically do whatever they want. And that's fine. It's just a setup to go gag to gag. That's the entire point of the plot. There is no real plot.
So I was going to say, is it actually a good movie, or is it just a collection of funny bits?
I mean, that for sure.
Like, is it a good movie?
If you're going on entertainment value, absolutely. And there's good, so there are lots of comedy.
You just said, and I quote, there is no plot.
Yeah, well, you don't necessarily need the plot to be entertained.
Well, that's good, because I apparently don't have one.
The action was good too, like very well staged, bloody, creative. It was great. Jackman is fantastic as usual. Ryan Reynolds is Ryan Reynolds. I thought I would be sick of his shtick, but I guess not, because I still enjoyed the movie and the, mm-hmm. the writing is really sharp. It's a hell of a time. It's a fun time at the movies. Would I ever watch it again? Probably not. I haven't watched the other Deadpools again either. But while I'm watching them, I enjoy them very much.
Understood. This almost reminds me of your review of the Mario movie. Mm-hmm. Where you were basically like, if you're into this shit, go see it. It's awesome. And if you're not, skip it. But like,
yeah, for sure. If you're not,
the thing here is superhero movies, which like are very, very popular. Like many people are in on these jokes. Maybe not quite to the same extent that you are, but you know, sounds like that. Am I wrong? Is that
no? You're spot on. Spot on. I mean, you're gonna, especially if you have watched superhero movies through the years. Like, this is not like you have to be into the MCU, because it's barely connects to that. It's very unclear how it even really has any effect on the MCU, honestly. Again, plot is basically non-existent. But it's more a love letter to superhero movies over the last 25 years. Yeah, like, and the meta humor involved. So it's great. But again, just a little long. That's like my main knock on it. Because even in the movie, he makes a fourth wall break to assure the audience like we're in the home stretch. So like, if you have to write that joke, you already should have like paused and been like, wait a second, instead of writing this joke, why don't we actually rework the script?
Why don't we trade that laugh for a tighter movie? Yeah, tighter 2 hours, 8 minutes, not egregiously long, but I'd love to see that under the two hour mark, for sure.
If when it's a comedy like this, like wall-to-wall laughs, like it can be tiring, to be honest. Like they could have tightened it up. But no, great. It's a lot of fun. It's made a zillion dollars and everybody loves it. So there you go.
Boom. All right. Our next movie, Trap. Not Trapped, but Trap.
Trap.
Correct. Trap. Okay. IMDb describes Trap as a father and his teen daughter attend a pop concert only to realize they've entered the center of a dark and sinister event. Bill, should I go see M. Night Shyamalan's Trap?
Yes. I gave it a yes, but I have found out after. So I always make sure to write my reviews.
That's a cold yes.
Let me explain.
Yesterday's fucking linguine.
I see the movie first show I can, and then I write my review. And I post it, and that's my That's my prerogative. Then I will look and see what others have said. In this case, I gave it a yes. And then I found out just how divisive this movie has become because a lot of people are absolutely trashing on it. So I might be in the minority a little bit. But it seems to me, from what I'm seeing reaction-wise, is that the average filmgoer is not liking it, but I've read other critical reviews that are very much in line with exactly what I think. And I think there's a critic versus moviegoer line, and I get it. And I say that because the issue with this movie is the last act. And so most people, if they walk out of the movie disappointed or upset because the movie ended poorly, that's what they leave with. Versus for me, and I think other critics, were more apt to look at the whole picture when we're deliberating on the review, if that makes sense. Because I also left disappointed. I mean, I'm not going to lie. That's the first note I have, basically. But to set up the movie, just so you know what we're talking about, Josh Hartnett plays a serial killer. And he takes his daughter to a Taylor Swift-esque concert. And it turns out that the FBI got a lead that says the killer's going to be at the concert. So they let the concert go through, but they add in security, surveillance, and the whole thing is going to act as a sting operation to try to trap this killer. Because they can check every guy in attendance that matches the description of the footage they have, basically, the grainy footage. And so I love the concept.
And they pull all these Josh Hartnett looking handsome bastards into a side room.
Yeah, they just pull them aside. Pull them out of the crowd. But the concept is great. It's very like Hitchcock-like. It's like the movie Rope from Alfred Hitchcock. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
Not Roped, but Rope.
Rope. It's like that. It reminded me a lot of that movie. But the problem is this movie, like so many others, has a third act issue, just like Collateral, just like Training Day, just like Deja Vu. Like the first two acts, they set everything up brilliantly. It just moves along perfectly. And then they just don't know what to do. And the end becomes a shit show. Mm-hmm. So for this movie, I loved the first two acts. Like loved. Literally edge of my seat, leaning forward into the movie. Because it's Hartnett. You know he's the killer, but you're seeing the entire movie from his perspective and the camera is showing what he's seeing and you're trying to puzzle out with him, like, how am I going to get out of this? And it's just so smart and it's so great and it's such an elaborate setting. It's awesome. I was like grinning again, like loved it, loved it. Hartnett's performance is amazing. It's what sells the movie. It completely makes the movie go. And it's phenomenal. The problem is, M. Night kind of wrote himself into a corner and then had to figure out how to get out and finish the story. And it just completely loses its way. It unravels. The certain amount of lack of realism you kind of got to give it to because it's a movie works for a while. And then when it gets to the end, it just goes like spirals into like, this is not real life. Like, this is not how people act. This is not how the police act. This is like absurd.
You start dodging bullets or something? Like, what?
It just gets crazy. It just leans into the wildly unrealistic. And like, I'll forgive some of that in small doses because it keeps the movie moving forward when he's in the arena. But it just gets crazy at the end. The pacing also feels like it grinds to a halt because when he's in the arena and you're with him and he's looking at stuff and you're trying to figure out what to do, like it just feels like it's a freight train and then it just hits a wall. So the ending was bad. It just did not satisfy me. I didn't like it. And so I get people leaving the movie being like, oh my God, that was so stupid. Like, I completely understand that perspective. I had it too. But I so loved the beginning that I didn't want to throw that out just because the ending was bad, because my enjoyment level was so high for the first hour and change. So I gave it the yes for that reason.
It's like you're familiar with the way they referee in boxing. It's like, it feels like you're describing a boxing match where like the guy's winning on points, but then gets knocked out at the end. So it's like, well, it doesn't really matter if you were winning on points. Yeah. Frankly, could have been kicking the shit out of the guy. It doesn't matter. But if you got knocked out at the end, you got knocked out at the end, you lose. You don't get any credit for like the good first, you know, two thirds.
I think that's what most people would say. I'm going to give it that credit. I literally could picture myself buying this on iTunes, rewatching it, and then after like an hour and 10 minutes, just stopping.
Just like, all right,
I'm good. Like, that's all I need. Cause like, I just thought it was so riveting in that first hour.
Gotcha.
Just absolutely. Gotcha. Loved.
Okay. But you're recommending that folks go out into the theater and take that ride.
I The level of enjoyment I got from it, it would feel disingenuous to give it a no.
All right.
Like, that's kind of where I'm at. But I also get it. And I'm also an M. Night Shyamalan apologist.
Yeah,
always have been.
I was going to mention that.
There's a bias there. I know that.
We are a Shyamalan pod.
We are. So I bet for most people, I guess I would probably say watch it on Max or whatever some night and go from there. But for me, I really enjoyed seeing in the theater and kind of being wrapped up in it.
Ooh, hour 45 minute runtime too.
Yeah, it's just those last 40. They'll get you.
So clear an hour and 15 minutes of your schedule.
Exactly.
And go check this out.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's move on to our last movie then. And that is It Ends With Us. IMDb says, adapted from the Colleen Hoover novel, Lily overcomes a traumatic childhood to embark on a new life. A chance meeting with a neurosurgeon sparks a connection, but Lily begins to see sides of him that remind her of her parents' relationship.
Mm.
Bill. Oop, I just saw a Skyline of Boston shot in the preview that's automatically playing on IMDb. Bill, should I go see It Ends With Us? And follow-up question, is this the first time we've ever had a husband and wife duo in two separate films?
For review purposes?
Should I go see it?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Should I go see It Ends With Us?
Yes. I gave it a yes. I just saw this hours ago for the first possible showtime at 2 p.m. in Thursday afternoon. So it's fresh in my brain. And I did give it a yes. And you're right. It is a Boston movie. A lot of shots of the Zakim Bridge, as we discussed in our tarot review. How do you establish Boston? They use the Zakim. But this movie also uses a lot of Back Bay. It's where the movie takes place predominantly. There's like one shot of the Citgo sign. No real Fenway appearance. Prudential weirdly gets a name check. But yeah, Boston movie. But it is based on the best-selling novel by Colleen Hoover, who has become an extremely popular novelist with young women. And I know multiple people that were like losing their minds when they found out it was going to be adapted.
In a good way?
It's yes, because it's just one of the most popular books of the last, I don't know, 10 years. Mm-hmm. Colleen Hoover sells books. Like, Colleen Hoover is the Taylor Swift of Stephen King's, if you will.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
She knows her audience and she writes to them.
Okay.
And I can confirm this based on the audience I saw it with, because I went at 2 p.m. today and the place was packed.
Jamming.
And I was maybe one of five guys in the theater. And those other people were dragged there by their significant other. Mm-hmm. Very similar experience to when I saw 50 Shades of Grey alone on opening night on Valentine's Day. But that's a separate story.
Jesus
for a separate time.
Christ.
But anyway, so I'm at the theater. I have a theater story first, Craig. Lots of young people there. They're clearly amped for this. And when I arrive, I'm looking down the aisle to my seat, and next to me is a girl who's already there. She is the only one in the row at the time. She's already got her shoes off, blanket in hand, sweatshirt, glasses, hair up, popcorn, candy, soda, just
locked in,
dialed in,
locked in.
This is her Avengers. Like, that's basically where we're at. So I sit next to her for the movie.
Love the blanket maneuver.
Brought her own blanket. Multiple people brought their blankets.
Blanket crowd.
They were into it. The movie itself, quite good actually. Like, I found myself caught up in it. It's a romance. There's a love triangle. It also deals with generational trauma and childhood trauma in general. I don't want to go too into this story because like the twists and turns are what make it interesting.
Yeah.
But it does do like the classic thing of it meters out information from the past right when you need it. It's just like purposefully withholding massively important context for these characters and then does a flashback like right before it becomes needed. Like, it's classic stuff like that. But so it knows what it is, but it executes it really well, is what I would say. And then as far as like the cast goes, that was another big part of it. Everyone was very excited with Blake Lively being cast as the lead. And she's very good. She's very good, given what she has to work with. I would say, as a character, she's kind of blah, but I think that's on purpose. Like, there's a certain vagueness to her that I think is on purpose so that women across the country can project themselves onto her. She's like a Luke Skywalker type. You know what I mean? Like, not a ton of inherent personality. Sometimes she's a little bit goofy and then sometimes she's serious, but it's just enough for people to be like, oh my God, sometimes I'm goofy. Sometimes I'm serious. Like, it just, you can just play right to it. But all the actors do a really nice job. Like Jenny Slate and Hasan Minhaj get a special shout out as like the friend characters.
Cool.
Because they had me dying. They were hilarious.
Love them both to death.
Especially Hasan Minhaj, just because, not even because of what he was saying, just the fact that he was there. I was just laughing at the fact that, oh my God, this is Hasan Minhaj in this movie. My one casting note, no Glenn Powell. It's a problem.
Christ.
Like, you're going to tell me you're going to make a romance film with stunningly beautiful people in it, and you're not going to cast Powell? Like, this movie scores very low on my Powell Power Index.
But aren't the love interests in this, like, rough and tumble guys from the wrong side of the tracks?
One's a neurosurgeon.
From the wrong side of the tracks. I don't know. No, I was watching the trailer fly by my eyes on mute on IMDb, and it just seems like it's a lot of stubble and six packs and punching windows.
Oh, yeah. How this guy manages to stay in shape, they don't touch on. He's a neurosurgeon in the OR all day, romancing Blake Lively at night, but somehow maintains that
physique.
Dude,
this is something I meant to mention when we were talking about Anyone But You, which I talked about in our last episode that I finally watched. I wanted to say this, but I didn't get around to it. But you just brought up both this phenomenon and Glenn Powell. Is one thing I appreciate about Anyone But You is when you have an incredibly jacked character who, if this was anything like, if this movie was anything like their real lives, they would just be in the gym twice a day. Like, they would have no time for anything else. They'd be fucking pumping iron constantly. Like, the fact that we never see Carmen Berzato on The Bear do a single bicep curl is just a fucking crime. Like, how do you get guns like that working in the kitchen? You don't.
Right.
But
right.
In Anyone But You, they at least give us a respect of showing workout scenes on the beach where he's doing like whatever he's doing, crab walks and freaking planks out there in Australia.
Yes.
Like, I was like,
they
okay,
also make like
nice.
They make a joke about it in the fact that like he looks great, but he doesn't actually have like any cardio and
vanity
swimming
muscles.
Yeah. So I appreciated that. This movie doesn't, no, no such thing. This movie, everyone's just ripped out of their minds.
Just bodies.
But it's a well put together movie. I mean, I got teary eyed a little bit. People were getting emotional around me. Like, there were visceral responses from the crowd, like gasps, ahs. Like, you know, it works because like it was clicking as it was intended to with the audience. I do wish it was a little shorter, our usual complaint. But I mean it in the sense that there's like a, I guess, sort of an epilogue in this movie that kind of keeps dragging out. Like, every movie eventually hits a certain editing cadence, whether you know it or not, like subconsciously, like how often they cut, like you could, like you just feel it. And then every movie usually ends with a take that lasts just a couple beats longer than all the other cuts in the movie. And you know, like, oh, this is the final shot. And so they have that. And then they go for like 10 more minutes. I'm like, that wasn't the end. Are you kidding me? Like, you just held this shot for this long and it's such a poignant moment. And then you're going to keep going for 10 more minutes. Like, just weird choice there. Every other choice I thought they made sense. But no, I liked it. I liked it. I would never watch it again, but I respect it. I appreciate it. They don't make a lot of movies like this in terms of just movies about people and their issues and trauma and just like nothing crazy, you know? Like, it was just, it was nice. It was nice to see just like a human drama was nice. Even if it is a little tropey and it's a romance movie and it leans into some of that stuff, it was still nice to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Is this, so Colleen Hoover, the author of the book, who you described as the Jane Austen of William Shakespeare's of...
The Taylor Swift of Stephen
King's. Yeah. Yeah, right. is this her first cinematic appearance? Or has she had multiple movies made from her books?
I think this is it, but I think I also read that more have already been greenlit of her books. So
sure. But if you're a fan of her books, this is like a big fucking deal because it's the first time you've seen it on the
huge
screen.
Cool. Massive. Yeah. So then at the end of the movie, this goes back. The super fan next to me starts like packing up her stuff, and I lean over and I say, hey, can I ask you a question? And she reaches for the pepper spray in her bag and I ran like hell. No. No, she was very nice. I said, can I ask you a question? She said, sure. I said, I assume you've read the book, and she said, yeah. And I said, was this accurate? Like, to the book? And she said emphatically, like, yes. And she seemed to really like it. So I assume that readers will be pleased with this adaptation because everyone seemed to be super into it. And she said that it was exactly like the book. So if that means anything to anybody out there who has read it and is wondering about seeing it,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, your poll, one person poll seems to indicate that it's a hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time.
Well, that's great. It ends with us. Fantastic. All right, Netflix and Bill, what are we, what's on the tube this week?
Not much anymore. We have a couple, we have a finale to talk about.
We do.
A sports doc and a movie that I streamed. I have those on my list. You want to start with House of the Dragon?
Let's start.
So the finale occurred of season two, and I thought it was fine. I see a lot of people kind of raging about the fact that it didn't feel like a lot happened in it, but I didn't mind it too much. I thought there were a couple scenes that were dynamite, and I feel like they set a lot of... They did make some progress, especially with Damon's storyline, finally. I feel like they did wrap up a couple things. They definitely set up for season three, but a lot of people are kind of making fun of it for the sense that the entire season one is like, war is coming, and now the entire season two is like, war is coming. It's like they're not getting there.
Right.
So I get the argument for sure, but I didn't necessarily hate it like some people have.
The finale itself, like I have... I don't want to spend too much time talking about like necessarily the finale as much as I'd like to talk about like just the season overall, which I thought was awesome. But yeah, the finale itself was kind of mid. I don't know. They made it seem like the fact that there's like troops marching to war in like the final scene was like some big deal. Like they haven't been forecasting this for, like you said, the entire existence of the show. They're like, oh, cliffhanger, there's going to be a war. It's like, motherfucker, first of all, have we not already been in a war? And second of all, like, yeah, we fucking know, dude. There was a couple things that annoyed me about the finale. I was super annoyed with the whole Lannister in the Triarchy, like in the Free Cities storyline. Like, why are we introducing new characters? Yeah. This seems like a classic episode,
out of nowhere.
Season three, episode one thing to be doing, introducing this completely fucking new character. Like, get out of here with that. I'm doubly annoyed by this because I watched the episode twice, once with my wife who was asleep and once with my wife who was awake. So I ran it back the following night and watched it again. So that was dumb. But yeah, I mean, there was obviously some like good stuff that happened. The Damon stuff, I'm very glad that we're wrapped up there. The scene between the two, female leads, it was phenomenal. So it's all good. But as many, you know, as old school Game of Thrones watchers, we know that the big guns fire in the second to last episode, and usually in the last episode, they're just picking up the pieces and tying everything in a nice bow.
Yeah, a few people have noted that this could have played really well as a season three premiere, as opposed to a season two finale.
I think that's true for parts of it, but the main part, the best part of this episode, I don't think would have been a good way to start a new season.
My understanding, though, is that they've already renewed, I believe, for season three and four, and that is supposed to be where it ends. I believe Martin himself has said like that book, The House of Dragons, could be done in four seasons, and it sounds like that's the plan. And they also gave us our first look at the other HBO spinoff show, I forget the name of it, Knights something, that apparently takes place 100 years after House of Dragon, but 100 years before Game of Thrones, an in-betweener show.
So I didn't see this because I'm watching it on the app. I think you're watching it on proper HBO.
I was
HBO.
Watching it on the stream on HBO, like the actual live broadcast. And they did a new sizzle reel for like what's happening in HBO this coming year.
Yeah.
And they showed the first footage of Last of Us Part 2, as well as this show, The Night of something. I keep forgetting the name, but.
Anyways, that's cool.
And it looks
Remember back a few months ago at the beginning of this whole business, I was very not in. I was like, you know, feels like I'm ready to move on from this world. But I'll admit that season two got me
back.
It's good. It's good stuff. It's good TV, man. Yeah. It's good TV.
And then speaking of HBO, I also watched Charlie Hustle and The Matter of Pete Rose, which was a two-part sports doc on HBO about Pete Rose and his career and his fall from grace and him wanting to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame and how that has not happened yet and does not seem to be on the verge of happening, even though he's pushing for it. And it was a pretty good doc. I mean, did it need four parts? Probably not. Probably could have trimmed it. But the footage of him and his career as a player was phenomenal. Just like, you got to love watching old school highlights like that. So that part was really cool. I mean, I knew he was a great player. I had heard he was a great player, but seeing it is obviously different. So that was really cool. When they get into the gambling stuff, sure. they do interview him as well as a ton of other people. And so sometimes you hear his story and how it doesn't line up with the facts or with other stories, and you get that bias. So it's not like 100% him production. Like, it is, tries to show multiple sides. I mean, I do think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I think they all should be in the Hall of Fame with asterisks and just explain the context on the plaque or whatever. That's my take on it, but I'm not sure if you have a strong opinion one way or the other between him, between whether it's the gambling or the steroids, if you treat him differently. I'd say treat it all the same and put them all in, but that's me.
Yeah, as far as the on the field stuff, I mean, obviously he was an incredible player. I just think that for gambling on sports, the gambling on the sport that you're playing in, like, I just think that that kind of has to be an incredibly harsh punishment, or else you really run, like, I just think it has to be like nuclear every time, you know?
You just got redline that.
I think so. I mean, it's more so nowadays than in fucking 1975 even, you know? Yeah. I mean, I just think that you'd have to come down like incredibly harshly on that. So being banned from baseball, and as a result of being banned from baseball, being banned from the Baseball Hall of Fame, I'm like kind of fine with it. I'm also much like, I disagree on the steroids thing, by the way. Fucking let all the steroid guys in. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
But sure. Similar to the steroids thing, the reason that really the only two steroid guys who are out of the Hall of Fame is Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, who are two famously massive a-holes. Pete Rose is like in the hall, asshole also, Hall of Fame. Like, literally. I mean, there's a lot of, he's got some sketchy shit. There's like a statutory rape thing from his past. Like, he's got stuff other than the gambling. Yeah,
they touch on that.
And he's just also a huge piece of shit. Like, every time he gets in front of a microphone, he ends up pissing someone off. It's very almost kind of like, I don't know, maybe in some circles people think it's cool, but like, he's just a massive prick. So he's certainly not doing himself any favors trying to get, you know, back in, or, I mean, I don't even know if there's an attempt or a movement by him or anybody else to get him back on a ballot or whatever, but.
There is. That's part of it, is him trying to make that move. But he also, they talk about him making mistakes in that attempt to get back on the ballot or whatever, and he says something dumb to a reporter and all that stuff. He's bad.
Yeah,
it's bad.
He's just incapable of not being a huge piece of shit.
It just seems crazy to me to have the guy who has all those records and the most hits to not be in the Hall of Fame. I get it.
I know, but he fucked it. No one to blame but himself.
I know, he did. So anyway, I watched that. And then the only other thing is I streamed a movie, an Indian movie called Kill, which has, I gave it a no in my review. It basically is, it kind of wants to be a combination of The Raid Redemption in terms of action style and Snowpiercer in terms of its claustrophobic setting of being on a train and like fighting your way through a train. It's like a combination of those two movies, but not as good as either. I watched it because the action looked cool, and because my understanding is they are doing a Americanized remake of it in the future. And so I figured I'd check it out. And some of the action is really good. There's a couple of really cool action sequences. I'm not going to debate that at all. Like, there was some cool stuff that I was glad to watch. But overall, it's kind of lackluster.
We doing subtitles, or is it in English, or what's the story?
Subtitles. They do use English once in a while. It's a little weird. They kind of slip in and out of it. But it's subtitled, yeah. Cool. So, yeah, I gave it a no overall as like a blanket recommendation. But if you're really into the John Wick Raid style action movie, or if you want to see it ahead of the US version, whenever that gets made, you can check it out. Maybe if it's more, I had to like rent it on iTunes. I would say if you can find it on a streamer that you already have, that would be the better method. So that was it. I think that's all besides the Olympics. That's basically what I've been watching. I've only squeezed in a couple things around the Gold Zone.
Fair enough.
Any TV, any other TV for you?
Man, you know, I fell into the algorithm's warm embrace when Kamala Harris got the nod, and HBO was like, "Hey, have you thought about rewatching Veep recently?" And I was like, "You know what?
They got you.
Let's do it." So Christy and I have been doing a casual Veep rewatch, which is just a joy. But aside from Game of Thrones and Veep, and you know, the Red Sox and whatnot, tonight's the first night as we speak. Actually, or it might even be over. First preseason, at least for the Patriots, anyways. First preseason game happening right now as we're recording. So no, that's pretty much it for me.
Yeah, I'm still doing my Game of Thrones rewatch. I'm in season 2. It's coming along a little slowly. I kind of blitzed through season 1 and then I end up slowing down. So I got to get back to that.
You and AJ, are you synced? Are you synced up?
No, he's already
even attempting.
He's in 3, so I got to catch up. But he's away, so maybe I can catch up relatively soon.
Love it. I'm flipping through online right now the United Airlines the movie selection. Try to see what I'm going to rock with tomorrow.
Got
to
plan it.
Oh, tickets?
Tickets, yep.
Tickets. Hey, you got any tickets?
I got a few. I'm going to see Cuckoo this weekend.
Okay.
And then Alien Romulus. And then Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Those are the only tickets I have in my wallet app whilst we speak.
Okay. Is this like a situation where we're going to be talking about this for 6 months, or are these movies coming up relatively soon?
A Cuckoo is really close, and I believe I will have seen Alien by the time we do our next recording, question mark? Yes, the Alien I should have seen by our next one for sure. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice might be the one after that, though, so you might hear about that one more time.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, we got a couple of movies coming up. I'm sure there's more that I'll buy on the spot, but those are the only tickets that I have secured at this moment.
Understood. Well, I look forward to discussing those films and more with you in the future.
Here on the Should I Go See It podcast. Thank you all for listening. Make sure to follow on Instagram at Should I Go See It.